Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. We recently commemorated Armistice Day and Remembrance Sunday, last Sunday, of course, and in it we remember all those who lost their lives fighting for their country. But what happens to those who come back home after completing their service? What do they do for work or training if they come back experiencing things like PTSD? How are they supported? And also if they're injured as well, not necessarily mentally, but physically as well. I'm joined on the line by Joel Oxbury, who is the Director of Income for the charity Walking with the Wounded, to tell me more about the work of their organisation and how they support veterans and also their families, which is as equally as important. Good evening, Joel.
Good evening, Clive.
Thank you ever so much for joining me this evening. First of all, tell me about Walking with the Wounded.
Well, you touched upon a few things there. Yeah, Walking with the Wounded support veterans that have landed on hard times, and importantly, their family as well. Walking with the Wounded is a military charity with a UK reach. So we've got operations in Scotland, Northern Ireland, and the length and breadth of England as well. And our focus is, as you quite rightly mentioned, on those veterans that have served, have come back, and unfortunately their transition back into civilian life has not been as smooth sailing as they would want. And they are a little bit lost and are looking for a little bit of guidance to get themselves back on their feet. And that is where Walking with the Wounded comes to the fore to help those individuals, because we believe that those who served deserve.
Quite, I agree. How long has the organisation been going, Joel?
It's in its 12th year now, which is amazing, really, because it feels like we've achieved so much, but actually it's in a relatively small period of time. So 12 years ago, our founder then, Ed Parker, was known for putting on an expedition, taking injured veterans to the North Pole. And it was very much just to really showcase the resilience and drive and determination of these individuals, which society in some way had written off. Right. They weren't the type of individuals that we thought they represented in terms of the armed forces. They had physical and mental disabilities and had lost their place in society. And as I mentioned, in some way, that they've been written off from employment and from future opportunities. And we said, no, this is not the end of their journey. And so we took them on an expedition and they achieved amazing things. But that's very much the platform that we use to talk about the wider agenda, which is how Walking with the Wounded can support around four areas of employment, mental health care coordination, and now volunteering as well. So it's been an incredible journey over those 12 years in which we've seen ourselves support roughly about 10,000 veterans during that period of time.
Gosh, that's certainly a lot of people. Why do you think it is, though, Joel, that society still continues to write people off? Because you see things on television or you read about it in the paper and you find that ex-service personnel are living on the streets, because they are quite literally homeless, they have no money. And you think, well, hang on a minute, they've either fought to defend our country or they've worked as part of an alliance to defend other countries, but they're a representative of the United Kingdom. Why are they on the street? There's something fundamentally wrong with this.
Absolutely, and there's so many issues. I mean, sometimes it's the fact that we simply do not know that they are veterans. There is a huge amount of pride that comes with these individuals, and often they'll get to the deepest, darkest places before asking for that help and support, because pride comes before the fall. So sometimes we just simply do not know, and therefore there's organisations like ours set up to support veterans that can't help if we don't know who they are. But also, we all have, unfortunately, preconceived ideas of what others can do based upon physical or mental ability. And that continues, and we're getting better with that in terms of equality, diversity, inclusion. But we're not quite there. And so we're all on a massive learning curve. And unfortunately, veterans, like any other cohort society that suffer from physical or mental disability, are often ruled out.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the word veteran gets overused because it sometimes it becomes stigmatized with people who are sort of, you know, 60s, 70s plus. If you use the word colloquially in ordinary English language, we assume our mind instantly conjures up a vision of somebody in their sort of, say, 60s or 70s. But, you know, a war veteran, for want of a better phrase, can be somebody in their 40s. And that's not old.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, you join the forces and can be 16, and unfortunately on training exercises could be medically discharged. So you could be 16 and still be a veteran. Veteran is a commonplace word, and that's why we use it. And actually, we find that our ex-forces tend to resonate with a veteran in terms of terminology. Mm-hmm. And it's quite interesting. We ourselves internally discussed whether we should, as an organization, continue to use veteran because of those preconceived ideas, and went through a period where we referred to our service users as ex-military. But again, it just seems to be a word that at the moment is commonplace and seems to fit the agenda. But it is interesting what you said about, again, people's preconceived ideas of age when we use that term.
We see in the Remembrance Sunday march past after the 2 minute silence on the television, and again the BBC used the word veteran, and you know, bless their cottons, they are, you know, they've served in the Second World War, they've served in other wars, the Falklands, Afghanistan, whatever, and some of them are, but I think it's down to education, and I think not only it's all about educating society, but also educating people on the correct terminology to use, because if people have these preconceived ideas, I think this may be how people are being missed, because you'd walk past somebody, and I'll use that example again, on the street, living rough and, you know, begging, and you think, well, you know, why are you there, kind of thing, and they don't look like a veteran. But they are, but because we don't know their story. It's also reasonable to suggest that people don't want to be found. Some people prefer to live like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's been a learning curve for me as well. I've been at the charity for just over 3 years now. I just thought, well, hold on, why would anyone want to live that way in terms of being on the street? It's so harsh in terms of the environment. But if you look at what soldiers have endured in terms of their living accommodation, rough sleeping isn't harsh. They've dealt with harsher environments, and actually sometimes living within society can be harder than the environment in which they currently find themselves in, because they have been trained to endure that. They've been trained to live uncomfortably, and that kind of has only just resonated with me over the last few months.
But that's where they need your organisation's support throughout that transition and integration process back into society.
Correct. And it's really interesting. We are talking at the moment about the veteran, and I liken it to a person that finds themselves in hospital and say it was a child, and the focus is on that child, but you forget about the siblings or the parents that are also going through turmoil. And it's the same for ourselves. You know, we don't just treat the veteran in isolation. It's that wider agenda. They come with us with complex needs, and we do a full case of support. So it may well be that veteran does not have a house, but actually the house is only one element of their care journey. They need mental health support. Mm-hmm. They need support with what is going on behind closed doors with their family. So their children or their spouse. So it is this wider agenda, and so we look at the veteran and their complex needs, but also it's this wider community as well, the armed forces community that is the spouses and the children. And we've got to get all of that right to ensure long-term independence. We can't just treat one element in isolation.
Tell me about your Walking Home for Christmas campaign.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, Walking Home for Christmas is our flagship campaign. Funnily enough, it takes place in December, and it is all around raising awareness and profile of the armed forces community. And this year, the message is ensuring that no one is left behind after lockdown. I think we've all endured mental hardship in one form or another. It's been a very unusual circumstance with restrictions placed on society that we have never had to endure. The interesting thing is we've all had to deal with that, but actually a lot of our veterans went into this climate with pre-existing conditions. And so their reality continues, even though those restrictions are being lifted. And walking home for Christmas is all about making sure that those individuals do not get left behind and that they have the support behind them. And walking home for Christmas is all about raising that profile, getting to the hearts of community, and ensuring that there is a place for these individuals that find themselves in need of support.
Tell me a bit about its diagnostics.
So it takes place between the 10th and the 20th of December. Mm-hmm. And essentially, it's all around individuals choosing a walk that means something to them. They can walk to a place of interest, or they can just set themselves a challenge. So, for instance, I myself took part last year, in the year being 2020. I carved that number into two, and I did 20 kilometres with a 20-kilogram kettlebell. And the kettlebell for me was meant to represent mental health and the burden that people carry around. And I wasn't able to put that kettlebell into a rucksack. I wasn't able to make it any easy for me, and at no point could I put that weight down. Mm-hmm. So I walked that 20 kilometres holding that, and that was my personal challenge. And I raised £6,000 doing that with a small team. Thank you. But that's what it's all about. Doing something that is a challenge for yourself, or something that is poignant, and importantly, it's about getting away from our desks as well and focusing on our own well-being. I think we're all living in a 2D society, using video conferencing as a means to keep in touch with people. And actually, there is a world out there, one in which we know that motion changes emotion. And so we need to get outside, walk, get those face-to-face connections, and make sure that people feel that they can join that community of walkers as well, and do something that's going to be better for themselves and better for the community.
Have you got a target amount in mind as to how much you'd like to raise?
Notoriously, the event has raised about £250,000 net for us, so an amazing amount of money.
That's very good.
Last year, though, it felt like we have kicked the sleeping giant, and it raised £350,000 net, and we'd like to match that again, because our ambition is to double our voluntary income in order to effectively open more hubs that we have in the community. So I mentioned at the start of this, Clive, that we have a UK reach. But in terms of some of those areas, we only have boots on the ground. In the northwest in Manchester and in the northeast in Newcastle, we have hubs in which we have the full suite of offering, the care coordination, so care coordinators, employment advisors, all in one centre. So essentially someone can knock on the door and get everything that they need. In other areas, we've just got those boots in the ground, and so we realise that, as I mentioned, we have to have that holistic offering. And so the future is to open more hubs across the UK, mm-hmm. In order to deliver that service. And to do so, we need unrestricted funds, and that comes in the form of event fundraising like Walking Home for Christmas and corporate donations. And so therefore, we want to keep on generating that income and kicking it on. So £350,000 this year would be amazing.
What hubs do you have in the West Midlands and here in the Black Country?
So in the West Midlands, we don't have a full hub. We have individuals on the ground. So we've got a care coordinator and an employment advisor. So we do deliver services in the area, and we also collaborate with other service providers. So Walking with the Wounded is very much seen as the referral partner of choice. Mm-hmm. So we work very closely with police forces across the UK, the NHS and other charities as well, be that military or otherwise. But in terms of the West Midlands, it's at the moment boots on the ground, so individuals within those communities, but it's certainly a location where we would like to have a hub. The other locations which we cited is a hub that we would like in Scotland and also one in the southeast of England. So they are our next areas that we'd like to branch into. In the Midlands, of course, having the population size that it does, is certainly in need of a hub like ours.
And how do we go about signing up for a walk?
The easiest thing to do is go online. It's walkinghomeforchristmas.com. And there is a fully enveloped site where you can learn more, you can register your team, and then that will put you directly in touch with my team of fundraisers to get your idea off the ground and the support that you need to raise as much money as possible.
Now, you did a lot of research, didn't you, that you had commissioned to support Walking the Wounded's Walking Home for Christmas, and that shows our mental health is still suffering because of these enforced lockdowns that we had during the pandemic. What did you learn from the research that was undertaken?
Well, I don't want to make it too scary, but it was quite shocking, actually. According to that research,
I'm all about reality.
We found that is the truth of the situation. So 4 in 5 people felt that they were still struggling with their mental health after lockdown, and over a third suffered from heightened anxiety. There was this overarching sense of isolation and people still feeling alone. I think it was about 32%. Felt alone. Mm-hmm. So despite the fact that we were able to connect with family again, people were still feeling very isolated. And I think that was shown in an event that we tried to run, one of the first physical events that took place in London. And it was just a networker, but the amount of cancellations that we had at the last minute, and it may well be completely unrelated, but based on the research that we've done, I couldn't help but think there was a lot of individuals that just got to the time and felt, I'm not ready to have a networking event. I'm not ready to do physical interactions yet. I think we're all getting very used to just being alone, and that is actually quite scary, certainly in the research that we conducted.
And this suggests that people generally still have, they're still affected by poor mental health quite badly. Mm-hmm. And there seems, other than organisations such as yours, there seems, you know, not enough support out there. I won't say little sort, because it is getting talked about more now, but I still think there's a lot more that can be done generally.
I think so, yeah. I think that during the period of furlough, so the first lockdown, if we cast ourselves back to 2 years, unfortunately, there's a lot of charities that really felt that they could not continue services. They would rather reduce their services, or in some cases, completely pause services, whilst they just got a grip of what was going on. Now, the problem is that service users don't get to pause their current situation. If they're feeling down, if they're feeling isolated, if they feel like they need support, it doesn't pause for them. Despite the fact that for charities that have had to furlough. So I think what happened was there was a number of individuals that would usually go to their standard port of call in their local areas, only to find that unfortunately the doors were closed. And so when that happens once, with these individuals, it takes so much for them to pick up the phone that the opportunity is then gone. So actually it makes it harder to reach those individuals that at that point of desperation were trying to find support and couldn't find it, unfortunately, because those charities, at no fault of their own, felt that they had to pause their services. Walking with the Wounded throughout of the pandemic has not closed any of its services. In fact, we ended up treating 52% more during the pandemic, and that's because we were able to adopt digital means to deliver our services, and that really helped us during that time. However, unfortunately, there must have been a number of organisations, some military and again some wider afield, that unfortunately didn't feel like they could do that. But I do believe that's half of the reason why there's a lot of individuals that still feel that sense of isolation, because at the time of their desperation, there was no one to support them.
In your experience, what do you think people can do to lessen the effect that lockdown and the pandemic has had on mental health?
For me, and I was speaking to my contact at the NHS about this, and it's taking that time to just be in tune with your own feelings. If you don't resonate with the person that you now are, if there's the simple things that you have stopped doing, like going to the rugby, or if you weren't going for those afternoon walks with the dog, If there is something that has changed, if there's a way that, you know, you're not responding to friends that you've, you know, you've normally responded to straight away, mm-hmm. try and take time to acknowledge those things that are happening. Motion changes emotion. So in terms of your physical and mental well-being, they are inextricably linked. There was a difference between first lockdown, if we call it that, and second lockdown, where the first, the weather was very kind to us. Everyone was out and about. They were walking, cycling, enjoying themselves, and it almost felt more of a holiday rather than a pandemic at some points. And then that all changed, and work ramped back up. And we started to live in this, this digital age. And unfortunately, the work-life balance got blurred. People aren't about as much. The weather isn't as kind to us. And again, I think that exacerbates the situation. So where possible, get outside, be grounded, take in nature. And again, coming full circle, that is the whole principle of walking home for Christmas. It's braving the elements. It's getting outside. It's walking. It's looking after your own well-being, both physically and mentally. So I think there's some of the things that you can do. Mm-hmm. But also remember that there are still organisations that can support. I mentioned the NHS. They are our principal partner. They are the first port of call for any of your health needs. And so you should be reaching out to the NHS, who can then refer into organisations like ourselves if you are struggling.
How did the partnership with the NHS come to be?
It was before my time. And it's been a long-standing relationship. But effectively, we have individuals embedded within the NHS. We call them IPS workers, which stands for Individual Placement and Support. And essentially what was happening was a number of veterans going through the 12 weeks mental health therapy through the NHS and then going back into their usual environment and unfortunately in some instances ended up needing that service from the NHS again. And what was found is that there were some aspects of the veteran of their life that still wasn't working for them. Often it was unemployment. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have meaningful employment. Almost overnight after leaving the forces, they've lost their sense of purpose. That was the one job that they signed up for, the one job that resonated with them. And without that, some of their identity was lost. So even though the therapy, mental health-wise, was giving them what they needed to get some sense of stability, it was all unraveling again because they didn't have that meaningful employment. That is the missing piece of the jigsaw puzzle that Walking with the Wounded provided the NHS. And so now, after that 12-week therapy, after the mental health support, they're referred into Walking with the Wounded, where an employment advisor, an individual placement support specialist, will pick that individual up and find them meaningful employment. And that has reduced the need to use NHS services again. So that's the way that it works. And it's a very, very successful partnership. There's other things that come under the NHS umbrella, but that is one of the main ones in which we work with them.
You partner with other agencies as well, though, don't you?
We do. I mentioned police forces. We've got a program called Project Nova, which is all around veterans that find themselves knocking in and out of the criminal justice system, and it's all around reducing offending. And we work with just over 20 police forces now across the UK. And then, of course, we also work very collaboratively with other service providers such as Help for Heroes, Combat Stress, and other organisations like Mind, of course. So we're very collaborative where we can. And if we do not believe that we are the specialists to give that support, we will refer in where necessary, not signpost, but refer in to our partners. An extremely collaborative network that we have here at Walking with the Wounded.
Where can we find more information out, Joel?
The best place is our website, mm-hmm. And that is www.org.uk. So the acronym for Walking with the Wounded, www.org.uk.
And of course, there's walkinghomeforchristmas.com as well in order to sign up for one of the walks as well.
that's right. So if it's the fundraising, and if it's intrigued you to get outside and do your challenge, walking home, and for anything in terms of more general information, or perhaps if you believe after our conversation today that you might require that support, then it's www.org.uk.
Joel Oxbury, Director of Income for the charity Walking with the Wounded, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Live. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcast from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.